You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Transition Wild Podcast, the home for those looking for expertise and inspiration on all things Western big game hunting. I'm your host, Adam Parr, and you're listening to episode number 2. How's it going, everybody? Hope you're doing well. Hope you're having a great day. Today's episode, we're talking with Kevin Brooks, and it was just really great to spend an hour or so with him and just chat. We come from a similar background. He moved from a different state. I moved from a different state. And now we both live in Colorado and enjoy the mountains and all the hunting that it has to offer here. So again, it was fun to talk with him. We cover his background, his story. We talk about this year's encounters and how his season went from a standpoint of both elk and mule deer. And Kevin's just loaded with knowledge when it comes to hunting out here. He's been at this now for 6-7 years, and I think you'll take away a lot of good strategy and information. I know I did from this podcast. So it was a pleasure sitting down with him and learning from him. And for those of you who may be going out for a late season rifle, whether it's mule deer or elk, this episode's jam-packed with information. Kevin really knows his stuff. I really appreciate him being on here. Hope you guys enjoy it. So give it up for Kevin Brooks. All right, on the phone with us now, we have Kevin Brooks. Appreciate you coming on today, Kevin. How you doing today?
I'm doing well, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, no problem. I'm excited to talk with you. We've kind of met through just kind of a little text message, Facebook, and kind of the connection there is through Drew Rouse at Real Game Calls. And we'll get Drew on the show here before too long, but I'm just excited to talk to you because you're an avid hunter. I follow your stuff. You know what you're doing, so I'm excited to spend a little time and hear your story, man. I appreciate you again for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, feelings mutual. Yeah, Drew's a great guy. Obviously, the Real Game Call industry, it's they're doing a heck of a job with their elk calls and their deer calls and everything as well. And it's great. I mean, social media brings people together, and you know, that's kind of how we all got connected. So it's been a fun ride so far.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's cool how you get to connect with people and you know, it's just whenever you can talk hunting, it's icing on the cake. So,
yeah, absolutely, man.
But yeah, before we kind of dive into, you know, elk hunting and mule deer hunting, you've kind of had a hell of a season here, and I'm really interested to hear your story and how it all went down. But just to kind of, for myself and for everybody else, what's your background? Where'd you grow up? Where do you live now? And what do you do for a living?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up on a small dairy farm in northern Vermont, of all places. Very rural town, blue-collar family, a bunch of hardworking men and women. And I've always wanted to live in Colorado. So once I finished school, I literally packed up my truck, and I think that was 2010, late 2010, I just packed up the truck and drove out to Colorado, and I ended up sleeping in my truck for a couple nights till I found a place to live and found some work, and the rest has been history ever since. So, you know, now I live in Fort Collins. I started off in Denver, and now that was too busy for me, and now Fort Collins. You know, I'd love to get back in the mountains like where you are, Adam. Unfortunately, right now, work's got me tied up here on the Front Range, but it's, you know, I worked for a healthcare data information company. It's really, nothing too fancy, but, I do the sales for them. And, you know, the nice thing about it, it just affords me the opportunity to do, what I love to do, and that's hunting. So I can't complain too much.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, it almost sounds like a very similar story to what I did. You're kind of a next level up. You sound like you just got in the truck and went out on a whim and made it happen. I kind of find myself in a similar boat, but it took me a little longer to get out here. I kind of put the pieces in place, and by the time I kind of decided I wanted to move, it was about 6 months after the fact. But it sounds like from your side, you kind of just dropped what you had going and drove out. Is that kind of the case?
Yeah, that's exactly the case. I had an old Chevy Silverado, and I packed it full and just left. It was just, sometimes you just got to take the leap, and I did it. And, you know, it's a cool story looking back on it. It's terrifying, but at the same time, I'm glad I did it. That's for sure.
That's awesome. Now, what was your experience with Colorado before then? Why Colorado?
If I had a dollar for every time someone asked me that. So as a little kid, I remember watching, and we're going way back here. I remember watching, I think it was on National Geographic or something like that. It was just a documentary on Rocky Mountain National Park. And for some reason, from that point on, I've just been absolutely obsessed with Colorado. And when I was 15, my father and a bunch of his friends came out to Colorado, the Flat Tops actually, and did a hunt. Second season elk hunt out here, and they actually didn't I think one guy got a mule deer, but they had some horrendous weather where they actually, the wall tent that they were camped in, they got so much snow it collapsed, and they got snowed in for like a few days up there. So
wow,
you know, after seeing all their photos and everything, I was just like, I gotta be out there. I was just drawn to Colorado. So yeah, it's kind of a primal instinct, I guess.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I find myself in a similar scenario. I mean, I'd been out to Colorado before not a number of times, but a handful of times, and it just, there's something about the mountains, right, that just kind of draws you in, and you never want to go, especially coming from the Northeast. I mean, you got a little terrain out there, but it's nothing like it is out here. So that's cool, man. That's great to hear.
Yeah, it sounds cliche, but it's, I had never even been out here before. I just saw pictures of it and I said, I'm going to do it. So sometimes you got to follow your heart. So that's what I did.
That's awesome. Cause that's really what this is about, and why I'm doing this podcast is really, to hear people's stories like yourself. I mean, you literally just dropped what you're doing and went for it. And I kind of want to portray that same thing, not necessarily people like changing their lives and moving, but kind of to inspire people to go on a Western hunt. So this is a Western focused podcast, and you know, it's awesome to hear that you did that and now you're doing it out here. You know, people can relate to that by kind of dropping what they know in maybe the Northeast or the Midwest or wherever that, and head west and try it, even though you've never done it before and there's a lot of unknowns.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it will change your life. I mean, there's something about elk hunting I can't even put it into words, to be honest with you. I mean, it's probably the most addicting. I was a whitetail fanatic before I came out here, and I still love to hunt whitetails, but there is something about elk hunting that's just on a, especially archery during the rut, it's on a whole nother level.
Yeah, exactly. You just have to experience it. And once you do, you get bit by the bug. And I don't have any plans of slowing down anytime soon. And I'll look forward to hunting out for hopefully the rest of my life.
Yes, absolutely.
So you grew up hunting whitetails. When did you get into hunting, from a very young age? And how'd that all kind of come to be?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my father's... He's brought me under his wing ever since I could walk, really. So, my first whitetail hunt, I think I was 11 years old, and, I got back. I still remember it to this day. I mean, I think it's my fondest memory of hunting. You know, I had a small little tree stand on the edge of an alfalfa field behind our farm. And after school, I ran up there, and it's just one of those perfect nights to hunt whitetail. You know, a storm was rolling in, the temperature was dropping. I mean, the deer, you just knew the deer were going to be moving. So I jumped in the tree stand and was fortunate enough to have a little three-pointer come in and was harvested him at it. I think it was only 13 yards with an old PSE bow that probably only had 40-pound draw, but it got the job done.
Hey, man, that's so all it takes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, he only went about 45 yards, and I was able to see him collapse. And to this day, it still doesn't feel real to see that all happen, you know, at such a young age. But, you know, so I got my start probably, right around 11 years old was when I first started whitetail hunting.
That's great. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you said you moved out in 2010. Now, did you kind of jump right into hunting elk or mule deer? I guess when did you move out? Was it kind of the summer, or was it kind of early winter where you had some time to kind of prepare, or what was that time frame like?
Yeah, so if I remember right, it was late 2010. It was practically 2011 by the time I got out here. So my first year, archery season, when elk season finally came around, it was more of a scouting mission, trying to kind of get a feel for what the heck I was even doing.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I didn't have an idea where to start. It was mostly just word of mouth from coworkers, et cetera. And, you know, some outdated forums that you find on Google.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I had a close encounter, and that was all that it took. You know, I think I only hunted a couple days.
Is
and
this
not
elk?
Because I didn't want to, but it was, yeah, this was elk, in 2011. And it wasn't it was more just from the financial side of it. I didn't have enough money to really be driving up into the mountains every single weekend at that point in my life. So I had to pick and choose when I went, but, I had one close encounter that first year with a bull, you know, and once you hear him bugle within 100 yards, I mean, like you said, you just get hooked. And, so after that, you know, the bug started to grow, and, you know, I started to plan for future hunts. And, you know, 2012 was when I really started to get into it, and, taking, you know, a couple weeks off from work and dedicating a lot of time to it. But that first year was more, you know, a lot of people, you come out here and it was just more of getting a feel for the mountains, getting a feel for what to do, what are going to be the challenges, et cetera, stuff like that, you know, and really looking at what gear I had. I mean, after the first year, I was like, okay, I need new boots. I need a new pack. You know, the list,
yeah.
The list was, got expensive really quick, because what I was used to having, you know, just didn't cut it out here.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I found myself in a similar boat. I moved out and I landed in Colorado in middle of June, 2015. And, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of just took I was hunting in Western Kansas and I had tags out there and I wanted to put all my, you know, focus on that. And since I was a non-resident and I wasn't going to have my residency by the time elk season came around, I kind of took that $600 tag and I put it towards gear. So I didn't even hunt the first year.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, you come out and you do have some of the stuff that you need. I mean, it's not like you're starting from scratch, but there is a lot of different gear that you need to kind of add to the tool shed there. And, you know, it costs money. It's not cheap.
Oh, it honestly, it seems like every year there's stuff that you look back and you're like, boy, I wish I had this at this time, or, you know, this was too much. You know, honestly, I pack more stuff in my pack and carry it around on a day-to-day basis, I think every single year. And this year it kind of reached a tipping point where I'm like, okay, I got to start figuring out what's an absolute necessity, and from just a survival standpoint to, what I can live without, because I mean, honestly, you could walk around with a horse and all the gear that you need. So the hardest part is finding that balance. What can you have out in the woods, stay out in the woods all day, and you know, not kill yourself on your back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, when you first started hunting, were you doing this alone and kind of just going in solo, or did you have some guys or friends that you knew and you hunted with for that first year?
I've been going in ever since I got here, it's been on my own, really.
Nice.
And, you know, it's not by default. You know, I'd certainly, my father's come out a few times, and unfortunately, my father just had the worst luck in Colorado. I don't know what it is. You know, the first year, 2012, probably the second year we were hunting, we called in. It was probably one of my favorite years, even though we didn't punch a tag. It was just one of those ones where you learn so much. We called in six different bulls, and, you know, unfortunately, he had an opportunity, and, you know, I think it was 5x5 at about 45 yards, if I remember correctly, and unfortunately, neither him nor I saw the branch that deflected his arrow. you know, so that was his first experience, and then we switched to muzzleloaders his second time out here, and somehow his peep sight on his muzzleloader broke in half. I've never even seen anything like it. So he's had some pretty unfortunate luck. But other than that, I've been mostly hunting by myself ever since I got out here. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I really haven't gotten into the social media stuff until recently. So meeting more people like yourself, you know, I envision myself as the years progress here hunting with some more people, because it'd be nice to share those experiences with other people in the woods. That's for sure.
Yeah. No. And, you know, I give you props, man. I mean, going in by yourself is a whole different level. And, you know, I'll never forget my first elk hunt. I went in and I kind of went in with pack on my back and tent, and I was going in overnight. And I told myself to turn around about five times walking in, and I somehow fought through it and spent the night and hunted the next day. But man, it's coming from, you know, the Northeast or Midwest, you're typically dealing with smaller tracts of land or not as big as terrain. And a lot of times you have cell service, and to become mm-hmm. comfortable with being uncomfortable or being by yourself, it takes some time. So that's cool that you kind of jumped right into it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you just have to, I think the biggest thing and probably the biggest piece of advice is just knowing your limits. You know, you never want to, as much as you want to be successful out there, you know, probably the most important thing is to know how far you can go and what your limits are, because once you go past the limits, that's when people get in trouble.
Yeah. I would agree. Certainly.
Absolutely.
So as far as like getting started with hunting, and we'll talk a little bit about, we'll get into kind of this year's season and your hunt. I want to talk about this year's elk hunt, because I've been seeing your stories and pictures and all that stuff. I know you kind of had a roller coaster year that way, and then we'll get into some really exciting stuff with the mule deer. But before that, how did you, tell me about where you're hunting and how that came to be. Are you hunting elk and mule deer in the same spot? How did you find this location? Are you hunting there, you know, year after year? Or are you kind of bouncing around to different places? Tell me a little bit about where you hunt and why you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the type of hunter that bounces around a lot. I know there's going to be some guys that hear that and just roll their eyes, which is fine. I know there's a lot of guys out there that think hunting the same spot is, you learn elk patterns, etc. Unfortunately, when I first got out here, I hunted a unit, is unit 18 out by Grand Lake. And I still hunt it today. I do spend some time in there just because I know it so well. But unfortunately, just, it gets to a certain point where, the hunting pressure just becomes unmanageable.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, 2016, I moved out by Glenwood Springs out there. It's 43, 44. And it seems like there's a little less pressure out there. And, I stumbled across this area. And in 2016, I shot a 6x6 up there. So coming into this season, I had high expectations because I didn't see a single person up there. Not one day did I ever bump into another person during my 2016 archery season. I mean, it was too good to be true. And, that really panned out, because this year, I had trail cameras all over the place up there, and had five or six different bulls that were coming into a spot on a regular basis. And unfortunately, I had probably six or seven different hunters that greeted me in there this year. That's the case. I mean, it's public land. All you can do is try to adjust to it and move on. I mean, there's nothing, I'll never get mad at anybody or anything like that. I actually try to spark up a conversation with anybody I meet, because honestly, if they're hunting the same spot, you know, my feeling about it is, hey, maybe we can work together to see some success. That's kind of how I approach it. And, you know, fortunately, when you approach it like that, I've had a lot of good encounters with a lot of people up in the woods. But that's how elk season started off. So I actually backed out of that unit and went to 18, kind of the unit I grew up hunting in Colorado here and cutting my teeth on it. And it's an area I know extremely well. And this is probably the story you're thinking about, Adam. The morning just panned out perfectly. I was walking up the trail at dark, and right at first light, I heard a bugle, and just knowing the area well, I knew exactly where he was. So I approached the area with the wind in my face. And once I got to where I thought I heard him bugle, I gave a couple cow calls and nothing. And then I let out a bugle, nothing. And just from past experiences, when I've bumped into elk in that particular area, they've gone to this one Aspen Valley, up above this location. So worked my way up there, and sure enough, I get to the top of the ridge, let out a bugle, and he responds right to me. And, I can tell he's closing the distance, and I'm like, okay, I know where you're going to go. I know how this is going to play out. So I give him a couple cow calls, and he's coming, and you know, your heart starts to race. You're like, he was 200 yards 5 minutes ago. Now he's 100 yards.
Wow.
And, so he keeps coming, And I can literally hear him at this point rubbing a tree, and he's rolling around in the wallows, but he's just out of sight. And, I give him a couple more cow calls, and all of a sudden I see tines coming through the woods, and I'm like, oh my goodness, here he comes. He goes behind some brush. I go to full draw, and you know, he's roughly right in that 30, 35, maybe 40 yards. That's what I'm thinking in my head, range. And then where he stops, he starts to rake a tree, and he's facing me. But as he's rubbing it, he's slowly turning more and more broadside. And, once he turned broadside, I let the arrow fly. And I mean, I'll be honest with you. I remember seeing that arrow hit him, and he jumped, kind of like if you slap a horse on its rear end. He kind of jumped and then took a couple steps and stopped real quick and then tried to run uphill. And I got to see where the arrow went in. And I'm sitting there the whole time. I'm thinking, I'm going to see you in 45 minutes. Like that's a done deal. But unfortunately the blood trail on him dried up, and I was never able to recover that bull, which is to this day, it's hard for me to even talk about. Cause it's the last thing you ever want to experience as a hunter.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, we've all been there. I mean, for people to say that they've never wounded an animal, I mean, maybe there's some people out there, but it's something that us as hunters, we have to accept that it can happen. It's not what we aim for. That's for sure. But, it does happen.
I mean, it's probably the most sickening feeling in the world. You know, I remember watching the blood, and it got less and less and less. And you just immediately start thinking, it's like, please, no, please, 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 no. And unfortunately, I spent the rest of the season in there. I never came across, typically if there's a dead animal, I mean, you're going to see birds, you're going to see predators. But in my heart, I think he made it. I don't know how he did.
What do you think happened?
I could be, you know, from, I was like a student studying for a test. The only thing I could think of is I shoot expanded broadheads, and every time I've ever shot, whether it's a deer, whether it's an elk, I've always seen that huge gaping hole every single time. And I didn't see it on him when he stopped. Like, after I shot, he ran a couple yards and stopped. There wasn't time to knock another arrow, but, you know, this all happened within a two-second time frame. And he was actually closer to me when he stopped. But I remember clear as day, I can still picture it as we speak now. I didn't see that prototypical 2-inch gaping hole on the broadhead. You know, the arrow was, location-wise, I would take that shot again every single time. Every single time. So the only thing I can think of is it went in it, and it hit a rib, and maybe it bent the broadhead to where the arrow, where the blades wouldn't expand. That's the only thing that makes sense. Either that or it deflected off a rib. But I mean, when I saw it, that arrow was straight on. I don't think it was a deflection as much as it was a case where the broadheads didn't expand properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, so placement I've heard happen. The placement looked fantastic. I mean, I literally poured through kill shot photos for days, and I'm like, this doesn't make any sense to me. I can't believe that I'm not finding him. And just with the amount of blood that I saw, you know, it was never pouring out of him like I've seen in other cases where, I mean, I've shot the same broadhead now for, 13 years probably. And I've shot elk with it where they only go 10 yards. You know, I've never had an issue with it. And this was just a completely different case and a different in every aspect, like the way he took off running to that arrow where he went in. I mean, I just did not see that gaping hole that I'm used to seeing on him.
Yeah. Yeah. And what did the penetration look like? I mean, did you find your arrow and were able to see that or no?
Yeah, it didn't go all the way through. I had, you know, so he ended up being exactly 37 yards. And I probably had about 10 inches of the arrow left that broke off. But I mean, I had blood almost all the way to the fletching.
Wow.
There is plenty of penetration. And the thing that kills me the most is if you look at a photo from my 2016 bull, and if I was able to take a picture of the shot placement on this bull from this year, they're almost identical, you know. And that was last year's bull was a double lung. And I'd have to guess that this one was the same thing, unless somehow it just went in. I know there's some open space in there sometimes, but it looked too good to not have a bull on the ground within 100 yards. I figured he wasn't going to make it 100 yards.
Wow. Yeah, that's tough, man. I mean, a similar situation happened with one of the guys from work. He was shooting an expandable, and I shoot expandables as well, but he said he hit it right behind the shoulder, didn't hit the shoulder, and it hit, and he just didn't get the penetration and hardly any blood, mm-hmm. and it could be one of those things where you do hit a rib or something went wrong. As I kind of...
Yeah.
And I love expandables when they work, and if you do have a marginal shot, they can be devastating. The more I think about it, though, you know, it's anything with moving parts can, you know, there's stuff that can happen, and there's stuff that can happen with fixed blades as well. I'm not saying those are 100%, but I'm kind of caught up in the air what I'm going to do for next year, knowing what has happened and can happen. Maybe I'll end up switching to a fixed blade next year. We'll see. But it's still up in the air.
Yeah, I switched mid-season after that. I went to a three-blade fixed broadhead after that.
Got it.
You know, it was just, even though I've had success for 13 years, I mean, all it takes is that one.
Yeah.
You never want that to happen under any circumstance. And it was just like, so I ended up going with a heavier, going into next year, I'm going to go heavier arrow, heavier broadhead, just shoot more weight. You know, obviously I'm not going to be able to shoot as far with that, but with that setup, but in my experience, I've never shot an elk further than 45 yards. You know, it's been, the furthest shot I've ever taken with a bow, it's been 43. And, you know, other than that, they've all been all been under 40 yards. So I figured, why not shoot heavier arrow, heavier broadhead, and just get something that really punches and punches hard.
Yeah. No, I actually did that this year. I bumped up to a really heavy arrow. I probably went a little too heavy. I went to a total arrow weight of like 550 grains. So I bumped it up by like 130 yeah. grains over last year, and they definitely don't fly as quick, but they seem like they're more forgiving. And then what I notice is that when you do get out to those longer ranges, the penetration is better because it's carrying that momentum. And then when it does hit, it's obviously got the weight and that kind of kinetic energy behind it. So I have yet to put it to the test yet because I missed this season. I didn't get to see how it performed. But just from target practice and seeing my old arrows versus this year's arrows, I see a big difference in penetration and how they fly. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing. I mean, after that transpired with the bull this year, I actually remember seeing you post about that. And I was like, and I've seen others post about using a heavier broadhead and heavier arrows. So I was like, you know what, I gotta do it. So, you know, unfortunately I haven't had too much time to experiment with it yet this year, because, even for deer, you know, you don't need as heavy as an arrow, especially when you're hunting out of a tree stand. You know, I don't think I'd switch from expandables to fixed for like whitetail hunting, for example. I mean, they just fly. I hopefully these words don't come back to bite me, but you know, from a whitetail perspective, you know, I've just never had an issue with those. And you know, whitetails, they're tough, but they're not a fraction of the size of what an elk is. So I think when you're thinking elk and you're thinking bow hunting elk, I think that heavier arrow and fixed blade might be something that people need to consider more.
Yeah, agreed. So, yeah. So that you told the story about this year's elk season. It sucks, man. I've been there, done that, and it's not how you want the season to go, and it's not how you want the season to end. Backing up a little bit. Now, you said you'd hunted that spot before, and you kind of knew the area. And I watch your Instagram and Facebook. It seems like you're running a lot of trail cameras. How are you doing that? Are you running them year round, or do you put them out in the summer and kind of monitor them that way? Tell me a little bit about your scouting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think trail cameras for elk hunting is one of the most underrated, underappreciated tools that you can use. I know getting up and glassing an area is great, but there's something about putting a trail camera up there and really seeing the inventory and when they're coming through. You know, it's eyes on the ground when you're not there. So I think I'm up to 7 trail cameras now. It's getting to be a bit of an obsession.
You can never have too many, right?
You know, yeah, you know, I'll probably add 3 more this year, but that's all I want for Christmas. Just give me some trail cameras. But I love them just from the fact that, you know, it forces you out into the woods, and it forces you to get up there and check it, because nobody wants to leave $100, $200 tied to the side of a tree. You know, so I typically, what I look for when I'm placing a trail camera is just, you know, any trail or any area, wallows especially, any area where you see a lot of elk sign, I typically try to find an area where I've hunted in the past, and, you know, we've all been there. The bull somehow manages to escape. It's like, how does he sneak out of here? So, you know, eventually you can kind of piece the puzzle together and see some trails where they can get out of there. So I typically place them on those trails just to see when they're moving through. But you know, from a scouting perspective, I've already started planning for the 2018 season. I'm starting to look at, you know, aerial photos of where I want to go and maybe some different units I want to try. But boots on the ground, I get out there beginning of June at the, maybe even May, but sometimes there's quite a bit of snow. You know, and the elk haven't really moved up yet. So depending on the weather, but right around summer, I start to get out there and start hanging trail cameras.
Nice. Now this terrain where you're hunting, what, describe that to me. I mean, what's the elevation? Do you have a lot of open areas like meadows and stuff that you're focusing on, or is it dark timber, aspens? Kind of what are you working with, and what's your typical scenario in the area you hunt?
Yeah, so it kind of varies. Out further west, out by Glenwood, it's more dark, heavy timber with, you know, your typical aspen draws. And I typically like to work the edge of that dark timber in the aspens. You're always going to catch a lot of elk sign in the aspens. I mean, there's always walls, there's water, et cetera. But once the pressure hits, and like I said, I mean, it's pretty hard to avoid pressure anywhere in Colorado. They'll move into that dark timber. And I think, you know, typically I like to be right around 9,000, 10,000 feet, just below tree line. I'm not one of the guys that early season hunting above tree line. I've never really done that before. You know, I typically like to get into cooler areas where you don't bump into a lot of people, and typically the elk like to go in there to get away from the people. I'm a fond believer, you hunt the pressure, you know, so just trying to figure out where they go. It seems to be the worst place on earth 9 out of 10 times where they like to go.
Now, do you see in your area, I found just from, you know, my very little experience of hunting, but I found that like flat, benchy kind of areas where, you know, they can kind of have everything they need, obviously food, water, cover, but it seems something about those benches or flatter areas that they really kind of spend a lot of time in. Do you see that where you're at as well?
Yeah, I see a lot of sign on the, on the benches that you're talking about. I think it makes for an easy travel corridor for them. But for some reason, every place I've ever gotten elk is the steepest, most miserable place on the planet. this year's bull too. It was just, you know, it wasn't an aggressive incline, but we were definitely, on the right off the top of a knob, and it was pretty steep where he was coming from. And the bull I got in 2016 was on the side of a mountain where, you know, when he fell down, when he collapsed, I mean, he was rolling down the hill. So most of my, for some reason, they've been traveling along, leaving the flat area and traveling. I typically like to figure out where they bed, or, you know, they're never as consistent as whitetails, but at the same time, you can kind of get an idea of where they like to go at certain points of the day, and I try to cut them off in that point in time. When I see them on the flat areas, it's typically early morning or late afternoon. It's been my experience.
Got it. Now,
is that pretty consistent with you too, or have you been seeing them all times of the day?
You know, where I hunt, it's pretty much where I'm at. I'm hunting the dark timber, and then I try to focus on like meadows or where you got like creeks coming down through with grass that way.
Yep.
That's just the area I know. I've never really hunted anywhere else, so I can't really speak to other terrains. But yeah, it seems like it obviously depends on the time of year. It seems like early season, you know, I kind of know where they're bedding, and I know early morning and late evening, they're going to pile out of those dark timber, kind of north-facing slopes and get out and feed. And kind of as as the rut starts kind of kicking up, I see a lot more movement. Obviously, you're hearing bugles, and I see a lot more daytime activity as the temperatures kind of drop as well. So it's kind of more seasonal and weather focus for me and progression of the time of year. So I think it just kind of varies.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a firm believer after the first week of archery season here, everything's off the table at that point. Everything that you've come to know and learn changes. Once that rut starts picking up and once the pressure picks up, I mean, it's just at that point, I switch to hunting bugles. I'm listening for them more than I'm hunting the areas where I know they've been in the past week.
Yeah. And Tell me about digital scouting. Do you do a lot of that? Like, are you constantly kind of, before you get into the season, are you looking at Google Earth and kind of studying terrain, or how's that all go?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like everybody else. yeah, definitely. I'm looking at it. I'm taking in areas. And, you know, the old saying goes, the further you get away from the road, the better off you're going to be. And that's true. But at the same time, you know, one of the things I think I've noticed most while hunting out here is I've always been amazed that even in areas where you see a lot of pressure, in the weeks leading up to elk season, I never bumped into anybody scouting. I'm trying to think of a time I've bumped into another hunter scouting. And, you know, as good as digital scouting is, I don't think there's any replacement for boots on the ground. You know, Google Earth is a great tool, but it's never going to show you how steep or how bad your knees are going to burn walking up that hill. You know, so you kind of have to get out there and experience it. But it's a great, I wouldn't use it as my only scouting tool. I guess if you're out of state, you know, you have to take that into consideration. But if you're here in Colorado, you know, I'll definitely find an area on Google Earth, and then I will go and spend a weekend walking as many miles as I can through there, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the same way. It's kind of a good starting point, and if you're trying to learn a new area,
yep,
it's a great way to kind of focus your efforts on where you're going to begin actually walking and,
exactly,
and covering terrain. And like you said, that's really where you're gaining a lot of your intelligence and learning these animals is from actually getting out there and walking and putting boots on the ground, like you said. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where trail cameras are so great. I mean, you leave them up there, and for me, it's like a kid at Christmas. It's like, I can't wait to go look and see what's on there. And it almost becomes an art form. You know, it's not as easy as it looks. You can't just hang a camera up there and get good pictures. I mean, a lot of times there's been a little learning curve as it goes, especially with elk, cause they kind of, they're not walking on the same exact trail every single time. And I mean, even if you look at some of my trail camera photos, you know, on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, they're always coming in from a different angle.
Oh yeah. 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 And they're, like you said earlier, they're not as predictable as whitetails. They could be here one day,
yeah,
they're gone the next. So it's,
yeah,
it's all about reading. A lot of it is kind of what you're dealt on that specific day, and whether you're chasing a bugle or, you know, early season, you kind of play it as it comes and play the cards you're dealt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing I've done a lot over this year too, and I bring this up because I just did it the other day, is if I see a ton of trucks parked in one location, and what I'll do is I'll go back to Google Earth and get an aerial view of like, where are all these guys going? I mean, what's so good up here? And then, you know, great, something I've had success with, especially with mule deer, is looking at that and then going into an area where I think all that pressure is going to push the deer or push the elk. It's kind of a backdoor way into some good hunting places, because anybody that's hunted elk, anybody that's hunted deer, it only takes one weekend to move an entire herd of elk into a different location.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. And you mentioned mule deer. I have yet to hunt mule deer, and I don't mean to kind of abruptly change the kind of the elk hunting, but, and we could talk about this all day. We'll definitely have you
back on
the show. We'll dive into some deeper stuff. This is all good stuff. I think everyone's going to love it. But speaking of mule deer, I know from seeing your Facebook posts and Instagram and everything and the text message you sent me, you killed something this weekend. Is that right?
I was very fortunate this weekend. Yes.
Tell me about,
you know, he's,
tell me about,
oh, go ahead.
Tell me about before we get into the story, are you hunting in the same area where you're hunting elk? What does that look like?
Yep. Yeah. So this is actually, it's the same unit. It's 18. This is just, where I hunt deer. It's the same ridge. I've hunted this ridge since 2015, and I've taken a mule deer off literally this exact same area 3 years in a row. It's just a lot of people don't like to walk that far back. And I'm just being honest. A lot of people will, you don't have to venture as far in for mule deer a lot of times, but you know, just from the pressure that I've seen from elk hunting and what I see the deer doing when I'm walking around for elk, I've just learned where they go. And this ridge line drops into a valley, you know, and it's about 3 to 4 miles as the crow flies back there. And I typically have that whole area to myself. And, you know, obviously I catch some mule deer on my trail cameras as well. You know, but a lot of times it's just, I'm taking inventory while I'm elk hunting. I mean, there's the buck I got in 2015. I saw him 6 times during archery season, and he was in the same exact spot when I went back for opening day rifle season mule deer. So it works both ways.
Nice. Now, so do you typically archery hunt and then you'll try to get a mule deer tag? Is that typically how you do it each year?
Yeah, well, this year I put in for the draw in Colorado for mule deer, elk, and unfortunately I didn't draw my number one tag. I wanted an archery tag for unit 43 for deer, and I ended up getting my fourth choice, which was second season unit 18 in Colorado. You know, and obviously even though it was my fourth choice, it should have been, it panned out to be very well for me. So, but yeah, I would love to get, I'll be honest with everybody, I've never hunted mule deer with my bow because for some reason I can't seem to draw a tag for the unit I want. You know, I'm building preference points, which is great, but, you know, I would love to do that and experience that. I just, for some reason, I haven't drawn. And yeah. that's kind of the way it pans out.
Yeah, and for people who may not know, in Colorado, you can get over-the-counter elk tags for archery, rifle. Mule deer, correct me if I'm wrong, is all draw. Is that correct, Kevin?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, you can have the leftovers after the draw.
Yep.
You know, that's equivalent to an over the counter in the thought process and how it works. But you know, you got to get there early. I mean, leftover tags go so quickly in Colorado now. It's unbelievable. I think the system crashes every single year they try to do this.
I follow the leftover list, because after, you know, they announce the draw results and, you know, all that stuff, they come out with this list, right? So, and you're scouring through there to see what's available, and then you can either, you know, go into a store and buy it there or buy it online. And yeah, it's chaos for sure. And, you know, definitely more people out there doing it now. And as the popularity kind of, takes hold, it's probably going to get tougher and tougher for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, you got to get into it, man. I mean, I know, if you like whitetail hunting, you'll love mule deer hunting as well. It's just making time for it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I can't wait. I just can't see myself yet giving up my archery elk season. Like, where I archery hunt for elk, I literally don't see a single mule deer. So, and not that, you know, I'm going to hunt there forever, but I just can't see myself giving up chasing elk yet with a bow. Maybe after I knock a few more down and I've got some more experience that way, then I'll start chasing mule deer. But I think I want to save up a few more points and, you know, get a good unit and go from there. I'm still undecided. I wouldn't mind doing a rifle hunt. Maybe I can do a rifle hunt next year and go from there. But I definitely want to do it. It's on the list.
Yeah. Well, rifle hunting mule deer in the rut is pretty fun. I mean, that is right up there as well. You know, fortunately I've gotten into areas where, I see elk and mule deer intertwined. So it's just, you know, if I could just get the tag for archery, you know, it'd be one of those things where I probably wouldn't ever see one then, but, you know,
that's how it goes.
You know, it'd be nice to have one.
Yeah, for sure. So let's jump into this past weekend's hunt. Tell me how this all went down, and you kind of already you know, hinted at it. You know the area and you know the same ridge, but give us the 5 minute or couple minute story on how everything went down and what happened over the course of this past weekend.
Yeah, well, so I've, you know, kind of the same routine. I know the area very well, so I just went in there expecting to do kind of the same thing I always do, and I just work with the wind in my face and kind of look down into some of these aspen draws where it connects into some of the darker timber. You know, unfortunately, that all went out the window. I couldn't find a buck anywhere in any of those draws where I've typically seen them in the past. So, you know, I ended up dropping down below where I typically hunt. It was right at the base of the ridge where I've had some success in the past. But once I got down there, it's just an area, there's tracks everywhere. You know, we had pretty good snow. It started snowing Friday night around 1:30 in the morning, then it stopped right about 6 o'clock where I was. So, you know, we had a fresh snow and you could tell pretty quickly if the deer were in an area or not. And it was just one of those spots where it was just covered from head to toe, deer everywhere. And I hunted in there on Saturday till probably about 3 o'clock. And I ended up leaving a little early because I wanted, judging by all the sign and just understanding the area, I was pretty sure that they were going to be moving through there in the morning. So I pulled out and just prepared for a morning hunt on Sunday and, you know, got back in there at first light. And, unfortunately they had moved from that one spot over to a different spot. And, you know, it's one of those things where I was, to be honest with you, I was getting beyond discouraged. I think I'd seen about 20 does at this point, and I was just sitting here thinking, because I never hunt second season. I always hunt third season or fourth season, and I'm used to seeing the bucks with the does. So I'm sitting here like I'm kind of at a loss because I've never hunted second season before. And then I just end up saying, well, there's one last area I haven't checked yet. And so I ended up circling around, getting the wind in my face. And I like to still hunt a lot. And what I mean by still hunt, or as my father calls it, he's like, just go hang out with the deer. I know it's kind of a cliche saying, but it's, you know, it's something where you get into an area where there's a lot of sign. And, you know, the area I hunt's not an area that's conducive to glassing. It's more of an area where you zigzag through it. You walk really slow and, you know, you kind of use your instincts and you're looking around to see, you know, if you can spot a deer. I mean, it's a tough way to hunt them, but it's been, if you do it right, it can be extremely successful. And that's what I did here. I just started zigzagging through this area. I'm like, I know there's deer in here. It's covered in rubs, you know, big rubs and, you know, 12 inch diameter trees. I'm like, he's in here somewhere. I just have to find him. And, I got to an opening and I'm looking and I'm looking and I'm looking. And then all of a sudden I just, immediately is when I saw his body, I'm like, there he is. And then, you know, I saw the horns and I'm like, oh my goodness. And so, you know, I just used a tree for my rest and, it was about an 85 yard shot and, made a perfect shot on him. And, you know, the rest is history. So he's certainly my biggest to date. I have not put a tape to him yet. I'm going to in the next couple days, but we're, from what I've been guessing and what I've been talking to people, he should be in the 180 inch range.
Wow.
It's kind of the number that's been thrown out there right now. So pretty amazing animal to say the least.
Yeah, man, that's a hell of a deer. When I saw you send the picture over, I was like, oh my God, he's got one. Can't believe it. I guess I can believe it. I knew you were probably in a really good area and you knew what you're doing. And when I got that text, I was like, hell yeah, man, that's great.
Yeah. I think when my first reaction was, I was like, that's a good deer. But once I got over to him, I was like, oh my Lord, you know, it kind of hit you that you have something special. I mean, I shouldn't say something special. Every deer to me is special. And it's really, you know, the score is secondary to me. It's the experience, you know, and obviously, having some delicious meat that you can eat as well. That's the reason why I hunt, is for the experience and, not so much the score, but it, you know, when you get an animal that of that caliber, it's certainly something that, the curiosity to see what it tapes out has certainly been eating at me. But, you know, to wrap up the story, I got him around 2 o'clock, and I still had about 4 miles to go to get him out of the woods. And it took me two trips. And I think it was about 11:15 at night by the time I was all done with it. So it was a pretty surreal evening walking out with the moon and the stars and the deer on your back. It was pretty special.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, you'll never forget that. That's a great deer, and let me know what it scores. I'm curious because I know it's a good one. That's a great deer. That's a great deer. What's on tap for the rest of the year? What are you doing any more hunting for? Later in the season, you going to hunt whitetails somewhere?
Yeah. So now as I confessed earlier, I am a whitetail fanatic. I know whitetail is like a dirty word in Colorado. It's really a dirty word in the West. I need to be honest with you. It's an underappreciated animal in the West. And I've never understood it. I mean, I think whitetails are, just an absolute unbelievable experience to hunt, especially during the rut. I typically head up to Northern Idaho. But this year I drew a tag for Eastern Wyoming up by where the Black Hills kind of spill into Wyoming. So I have that on tap for the middle of November. And next week I'm actually flying back home to New England to hunt with my father. It's been way too long since I've had an opportunity to spend any time with him in general. So it's something I'm really looking forward to, just to spend some time with the old man and get back to my roots, so to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait as well. It sounds like you got a jam packed fall, and look forward to seeing what comes from that. Before we jump off here, tell us a little bit about Colorado Big Game Club. I've been following that and you know, like the page and the website and everything. When did you start that? What's it about? Tell everybody where they can go to find it and what it entails.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you can find it at www.coloradobiggameclub.com. It is really, it spawned, you know, I mean, everybody that I've watched, I mean, even yourself, Adam, it all has kind of come together from what a lot of other people have done. You know, as the hunting industry grows, you know, we need voices within the industry to talk about a lot of the good things that are going on within the hunting industry. You know, social media has really made hunting visible to a greater audience, which is fantastic. But at the same time, when that happens, you know, we're going to face obstacles, and the hunting industry is only going to be as strong as our ability to work together. And hopefully we can do that through Colorado Big Game Club. So essentially what we're doing is just celebrating Colorado's hunting heritage, Colorado's hunting culture, and really celebrating the success of hunters in the state of Colorado. You know, it's not just to highlight Kevin Brooks or anybody else. It's really to highlight everybody that's in the state that's cutting their teeth on public land, private land, whatever it might be. You know, it's really to celebrate their voice and celebrate their success and celebrate their experiences, and hopefully we can learn something from it.
That's great, man. Yeah, that's great. So if you're listening, go check out Colorado Big Game Club. Connect with Kevin, follow what he's doing. But let's wrap this up. We could talk for hours, I'm sure, and we'll definitely have you back. It's been great. Sorry it took so long to finally actually talk to you and talk on the phone here, but you know, I'm glad we finally made it happen, and definitely appreciate you being on, Kevin.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me, Adam. I greatly appreciate it.
And that is it for episode number 2. It was seriously a pleasure sitting down with Kevin. Can't thank him enough. We'll look forward to having him back on the show. The guy really knows his stuff, right? Loaded with knowledge, and we could dive into so many different angles on a lot of what we were talking about. But again, it was just great to hear his story from this year. I hope you guys learned something. I hope you're inspired. I hope you're like... you like what you're hearing, and you know, leave me some feedback. I hope you were able to take something away from this and apply it to maybe next year and go on your own hunt. With that being said, make sure to subscribe to the Sportsman's Nation podcast. It's loaded with a lot of great information. I'm doing the Western Hunting Podcast. There's also a couple others on there, the DIY Sportsman, the Land and Legacy, and of course, Nine Finger Chronicles. So subscribe. You'll get these episodes delivered to your phone every week or however you want to listen to them. But make sure to do that. If you haven't checked out transitionwild.com, go over there, check out the site, give me some feedback, and follow me on social media. It's all sincerely appreciated. I'm looking forward to hunting whitetails. My kind of mountain western hunting has wrapped up here, and I'm ready to kind of head east, and we'll start with Iowa, and then we'll head out to Kansas for some whitetail hunting. So again, appreciate the support. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you later. Have a great day.